This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Come get some. See where
I live. IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Marty Sliva.
Hello.
Vince Ingenito.
Carly Simon is super fan right here.
Carly Simon.
That was his second crush.
Super fan.
First one was Chitara. We were just talking about this.
Yeah, Vince's first crush was Chitara.
So that's out there now.
The internet knows.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking about Homefront the Revolution. We're going to talk some more about VR. But first, Assassin's Creed Chronicles India.
I've heard of that game.
Vince reviewed it.
Yes.
Give it a 10 out of 10.
Yep. Nope. Wait a minute. Hold the phone.
I have to go back into the CMS.
That's what my notes say.
My notes say.
It is now a reality.
This is the second of a trilogy of 2D-ish side-scrolling Assassin's Creed games. The last one was China, came out last spring.
Uh-huh. And I
reviewed that one as well.
Gave that one a 6 point. China.
Sounded like you said something else.
I reviewed China, and it was I gave it a 6.4. This one I gave a 6.0. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a step backwards. Like, I criticized China for being kind of a little bit soulless and drab, just kind of not having really any energy or soul. I know that sounds like a weird, kind of amorphous way to criticize a game, but just didn't have, like, in the art and the environments, just kind of felt kind of dead, and the combat didn't feel kind of kinetic or interesting or fun. They fixed a lot of that with India, which was great, and that's exactly what I wanted them to see. There's just flourishes of color kind of everywhere. Combat feels a little bit more direct, and the animations and kind of the art that goes along with that and the effects kind of punch it home a little bit more, which is great. It's everything I wanted them to do, but then the mission designs just kind of took a...
So what are the missions like? Is it a typical Assassin's Creed submission, assassinate this target?
So, no, it was not that, and it is not that, but here's the thing is that I liked Assassin's Creed China in a way, gameplay-wise, only because it didn't feel like Assassin's Creed. Mm. It felt more directly just about stealth and traversal and not a kind of a whole lot of the other kind of bloated other mission types, like the trailing missions and the kind of instant fail as soon as you get detected, it's your desynced missions. You didn't see stuff like that so often in China. Mm. India relies super heavily on those kinds of missions, as well as a lot of a kind of instant death mechanics where it's like, hey, there's a hidden tripwire here that you didn't see as you're running through this level, and now you're just dead and you have to redo the whole checkpoint all over
That's
again. Or enemies that just come along like about three quarters of the way through the game that just hide in the same nooks you can hide in. You can't actually see them you can't see them just by looking. Like, if you went into Eagle Vision, you might be able to see them. But if you don't think to stop and look in Eagle Vision, which is not something the game really trains you to do, you can just walk by like a doorway and then all of a sudden, oh, you're dead. Just out of nowhere. So really interrupts the rhythm of the game.
Yeah, I play through all of China and a little bit of India, and I totally agree with you the fact that the settings feel soulless, which is weird because AC games, for all of their faults, the settings are always really interesting.
Yeah.
It's always one of those things in those games where you can sort of just stand still and have cool things happen around you, and you can watch and be like, wow, that looks like the Caribbean, or that looks like, you know, Victorian London. Whereas with these games, it's nothing is happening unless you are moving and interacting with things. Like, there are no worlds. There's really not a whole lot of, like, NPCs or anything like that.
Building. Nothing like that, really. Very little. But what's nice is that at least India looks better. I mean, there's more, there's more, in, just visually, just at a glance, you took a screenshot of one and of China and then of India, and you look at India and be like, wow, look at all this color, look at all this life, you know. You'd at least be able to appreciate it, I think, from an art standpoint.
Yeah.
Whereas China just felt a little bit drab. So, like, yeah, went took a step up in the visual department, but then in terms of the gameplay, the mechanics are still sound. Like, the platforming controls are still fluid, and they found a surprisingly, they really did a good job, a surprisingly good job, of taking the trappings of, like, a stealth game and just putting it into a 2D plane and, and maintaining a lot of it. So that's really cool. It's just they put you in these mission types and these environments where you they find ticky-tack ways to just kill you and give you a fail instead of giving you the freedom to kind of apply those tools in interesting ways in kind of a free way.
But 2D stealth has already been done masterfully in Mark of the Ninja.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfected.
I mean, that's sort of the, every time I play these games, I'm like, well, what if I just went back and played Mark of the Ninja?
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder what those guys are working on.
Was it, is that Clay?
That was Clay. Yeah. Well, Nell's the lead on it is at Campo Santo now.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
And since then, Clay's done Don't Starve.
Don't Starve,
and,
which I love.
Invisible Ink.
It was originally Incognita, it was called, but then it changed names to Invisible Ink.
Yeah.
And then Clay helped out a little bit with Darkest Dungeon, which is about to come out. It looks it is so.
It's a real good video.
That's so good.
Tuesday. Next
yep.
Week.
Yeah.
Ah.
So two of these 2D Assassin's Creed down. Russia is still to come.
Yeah, that's right.
That one looks cool, and that's like the Bolshevik Revolution. That's as far ahead as any AC game has been.
Well, so
it's like early 1900s.
Syndicate was the farthest one, so this one's even
further. Yeah, this is early 1900s. There's like guns and muskets. Probably a Russian dude. Muskets. What? Just guns.
The blunderbuss. After you've reviewed two of these games now and found them both okay.
Yeah.
Do you think there is still a good 2D Assassin's Creed like that? That's possible. Does that game work in 2D?
No, absolutely. Like I was. What surprised me when I played China was how well they found a way to make those kind of stealth mechanics work in 2D. I mean, like, yeah, sure, it's been done before, but kind of in a. I think that what was really smart about the way Mark of the Ninja did it was that they. I don't want to say they simplified things, but they knew what to streamline and what to keep. And what would work really well in a very plain way in 2D and what wouldn't. I feel like, for the most part, the AC Chronicles games feel like they're taking most of what you do in Assassin's Creed from, you know, the double takedowns and like kind of lockpicking and pocket and pickpocketing and all those different ways of blending in with the environment, causing distractions. All that stuff is there, which I think is super impressive that they're able to find a way to make that work in a 2D context. So it's totally there. Just, I would say, China had the level design and most of the gameplay, but kind of felt empty and soulless. And then India had more charisma, kind of more life, more color, better art, but the level designs took a turn for the worse. So I feel like if they can just get the play, you know, the gameplay and the level designs and the mission construction from China and mix it with the art and the verve that India has, they'll have a totally good game on their hands.
Maybe they'll have a 7.
Maybe they'll have a 7. Maybe even higher.
And make a good game.
Also this week, Marty, you reviewed the console version of Gone Home.
I did.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. Exciting. Finally. Yeah,
it's got those Chivos.
It's got Chivos now.
It came out on PC in 2013.
Jeez, yeah, it was weird to go. Yeah, it was early fall 2013. I went back. I was a better writer then. I've gotten significantly worse. Yeah, the game is still amazing. I gave it a 9.5 then. It was one of the Game of the Year nominees. I think the game absolutely holds up in terms of storytelling and exploration and really cool themes and a really amazing cast of characters and a world.
Did you find when they ported it to console, did they keep all the ghosts that are in the house?
All the ghosts. There's more ghosts.
Ooh,
1080p, ghosts. 60 frames.
Haven't added.
60 spooky frames per second. Yeah, the game's great. It's out today on PS4 and Xbox One, $20. Highly recommended if you haven't played it yet on PC.
Yeah.
Really great game.
Yeah, and the 60 frames per second is really helpful for the part where you have to shoot all the zombies.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, yeah, you need to be really precise. And, I mean, this is going to be an eSport, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. That was a lie. It's not. Please don't tweet mean things to me about this game like everyone else has. Just play it. If you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's a very, very cool experience.
Yes.
It's
an
awesome.
Now, moving on to a game that's coming in the not-too-distant future, Homefront The Revolution.
Whew.
This game's release date is May 17th, we now know. Let me gauge your interest level in Homefront The Revolution.
Yeah, I mean, it's higher than I expected based on, like, out of all the things that, like, you know, it came in the sell-off from
THQ.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man.
Actually, but it changed hands more than once.
Yeah, because it went from Chaos to THQ,
right.
From THQ to Crytek.
Yeah. Right.
Crytek stopped paying people, and so Deep Silver came in.
Like, out of all the things from Deep Silver to, you know, rise out of the ashes of THQ, I couldn't believe that Homefront was the one, but the new one looks really cool. And I guess in its defense, you know, Homefront, the first game, was not great, but the idea is really
multiplayer
cool.
Multiplayer was really cool.
It got good reviews.
Yeah.
It was not badly reviewed.
In my opinion, those reviews are a little overrated. I mean, I don't think it's a great or especially memorable or interesting shooter in any
way. I mean, it was also, the campaign was incredibly short.
Yeah.
The campaign was like 3 hours long. Mm.
And, but, what I'm getting at is the core idea of it, like America being invaded, Call of Duty sort of touched on that a little bit, but, like, mm-hmm. it's just cool. It's a neat idea for a shooter.
Yeah. Like Red Dawn.
So, there's more room there. Like, there's more juice to squeeze out.
Remember at that GDC before Homefront came out, they put all those balloons in the bed and got yelled at?
Yeah, I do.
Don't do that again. I played this game at PAX, and it had a lot of really interesting ideas. Like, it's set in Philadelphia, and it's open world. You're collecting missions. You can go about solving problems in really different ways. You can be very stealthy. You can use the environment.
It's actually mandatory.
Cool future tech.
Games have to be open world now.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a new law.
Yeah. Even puzzle games. Which
thanks,
doesn't
Obama.
Make sense.
It was in the State of the Union.
Yeah. It was in the STOTUS. Yeah, really interesting. You can, a lot of like weapon customization, you get these little parts and you can stick them on shotguns and rifles and everything. I think it's also coming out at a really good time. I think that mace slot is good.
What do you think about that?
It's very smart.
I think it might be, it's one of very few games we know of coming in May as of right now.
Yeah, that and Mirror's Edge.
Yeah,
I still think
right,
Mirror's Edge is going to get delayed.
Well, you were right about Tomb Raider, so.
I was, yeah. That's crazy that Tomb Raider's still not out yet.
Yeah.
But April's really busy with Dark Souls 3 and Quantum Break and
really busy
Uncharted
now.
And Star Fox.
Yeah, Uncharted, I missed it. It happened over the Christmas break that Uncharted was delayed a month.
Yeah.
And then I saw it referenced somewhere else, and they're like, thanks to Uncharted's delay, and I'm like, whoa?
I think that's also going to get delayed till fall. I'm going to say every game's going to get delayed till fall, because one or two of them are.
Uncharted.
Like Nostradamus.
I think Uncharted is going to stick.
Okay.
I just think it's a cool time to also release that kind of a shooter, because I feel like not that Homefront is in any way like close, like super similar to Call of Duty or
They totally occupy the same space.
In terms of market, I think it does occupy a similar space, even if I wouldn't say it's fair to call them mechanically identical or super close. But the nice thing about that is that it's just like a guarantee that those games are going to come out, you know, October, November. So if you want to release like a grittier, more realistic-ish modern shooter, like any time other than that window is actually a pretty good time to release.
Yeah, and this is the same window Wolfenstein came out in 2 years back.
Yep,
Wolfenstein.
That hit a good spot. And also, we don't, aside from Far Cry Primal, which I wouldn't even say is in the same sort of genre as this, there's no shooters coming out. There's a ton of games coming out the first half of the year, but no FPSs.
Uncharted isn't an FPS, but it's
a TPS.
Yep.
Yeah. It's core gameplay loop.
It's a TPS report.
Yeah. That's true.
There's doesn't take place in Philadelphia. What if it does, though?
What if it does?
Brotherly love.
So in Homefront, the premise is that America has been occupied by North Korea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In a situation like that, what do you think North Korea would do with the Korean Americans? Are they occupied as well, or brought back into the fold? I'm just curious.
Do they get a chance? Like they get maybe it's a coin flip, hot coin flips.
Coin flip.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it would probably have something to do with how many generations they'd been in America.
Yeah. You're taking this question far too seriously.
Oh,
I mean, that was a really good answer.
I was just wondering.
If you're like first generation. Yeah.
Well, I thought we were theory crafting on it.
What's going to happen to Anyang?
Anyang.
Were we to be occupied by North Korea, do you think our Korean food options would increase?
I do. So here's the pro and con.
Right?
Con, like, all personal
Korean
freedom
food?
Stamped out, country overthrown, ran by a dictatorship.
Yeah.
Pro, Korean food almost undoubtedly would improve.
The kimchi will run out of rivers of water. The pickle, the daikon.
Homefront: The Revolution is out May 17th.
Yep.
We have an email from one of our listeners named Yancey.
Hey, Yancey. Yeah, Yancey. I like your bar a lot.
Yeah. Owner of Yancey's Bar here in San Francisco. Big fan of GameScoop. Says, hey guys, long time listener, first time writer. I'm writing because I just found out GameStop stores are closing all over Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
This for me is heartbreaking, seeing as it is my go-to store for video games. Obviously, there are other stores where I can buy games, but it is not the same. I was wondering if this is something you could talk at the show.
Yeah. I was talking...
So we don't live in Puerto Rico.
We don't. No, I was talking to this with Jose, who is Puerto Rican-American, and he was sort of explaining that like Puerto Rico is actually in a economic crisis now.
Yeah.
So this is sort of, yes, GameStop is closing, but it's like a bigger thing than that.
Yeah, they might actually declare bankruptcy, think. The whole territory, the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not good. I feel like it's a... I would say it's more of a victim of that than sort of any indication that GameStop as a whole is on the decline, even though I think GameStop as a whole is on the decline.
Well, it's like, we like make fun of GameStop, right? Like, it's a butt of a lot of jokes, and like, I just buy my games on Amazon, or I buy games digitally on Steam or whatever, but it's kind of easy to forget that that's like such a first world perspective, and like for a lot of people, not that Puerto Rico is not the first world, I'm just saying that other people in places outside of the contiguous United States don't have options to like get a game the next day in the mail or like...
Well, Amazon does ship to Puerto Rico.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it the same? Like, I know, like, I have a sister that lives in Hawaii, and like, it's just kind of a pain to get anything shipped out there. Mm. Like, it doesn't cost more, it just takes a long time.
Yeah. I also think we just, like, I don't know, we have savvy tech jobs, and we live in a pretty,
tech-based
city. My buddies back in the Midwest, like, they all still get games from brick and mortar.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make any judgments about Puerto Rico or anything. It's really more about us. And like, when I think about how I get my games and how easy it is and how fast it is, that like, it's kind of easy to forget that other people have just a different experience elsewhere in the world.
Also, we take it, also because of our position, we take it for granted that we can come to, like, every day we wake up and we go to a place where we're surrounded by people we can speak intelligently with, like-minded people, right? And for me, I mean, I worked for GameStop, well, before it was GameStop, I worked for Electronics Boutique for, and then GameStop for...
EB Games.
And then EB Games, right, for about 8 years or so, part-time and full-time. And for me, before they were publicly traded and before they got taken over by GameStop, honestly, the job was build community. It was talk to every person who walked in the door and make them feel like your store is a place they can go to find the people who are like them.
Totally.
And it's easier to find people who are like you now with the internet, I suppose, but like, there's a difference between going on a message board and, you know, typing stuff into the ether and going into a store and talking to someone who knows your name and is happy to see you and catching up with them about what you've been playing. Sure. And if you don't have that experience in your life, like in school or with your particular circle of friends, or if your family doesn't play games, that can still be a valuable, to me, I would imagine, that to some young people that would still be a valuable.
Yep. Yeah, not for sure. Like midnight launches for stuff. I have fond memories of going to Halo 2 and 3's midnight launch.
Sure.
Yeah, I think anytime we write about GameStop on the site, on IGN, the comments are just filled with negative things about GameStop.
Yeah. Right?
Everyone loves to joke about how little they give you for trading in games.
Yeah. Sure.
They'll sell a used new game for $3 less than its regular price.
And I was front and center for all that.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was growing up, Electronics Boutique, I thought that was the coolest place in the world. Every time I went to the mall, I had to go into Electronics Boutique and just like look at the new games. Mm-hmm. And the guy that worked there was like this redhead who had the most awesome 80s metal hair. It was like huge. It was like went up way over his head and then like all the way down to his butt. It was awesome. I just knew he was in some sort of like hair metal.
You're like, that guy's so cool.
Yeah.
We didn't have enough money for me to like buy a game all the time, but every once in a while I got to go in and just pick out a game. It couldn't be like a $60 one, but like I think maybe like a Game Boy game or something like that, or like Game Gear I had when I was little. It's like you can pick out any of these Game Gear games and buy them. And then just the agonizing decision of like, you don't have anything to base it on. You're just looking at the back of the box, hoping that it's not going to be some terrible Game Gear game. It always was.
And it always was. I mean, they're all terrible. There's a GameStop right on like Market Street, sort
huge
of all of our routes home. And it's like, that place is like always crowded, and there's always people on the inside, and they have a big like used game market, and there's a bunch of toys there, and midnight launches have lines around the block, so people do still care about it.
But I wanted to point out to Yancey that Amazon does ship to Puerto Rico, and now they just announced this new Amazon Prime discount for video games. You guys hear about this?
For pre-orders, right?
Yeah, well, and even or, 2 weeks after the game. So if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get 20% off every video game.
That's really significant.
That you pre-order, or even up to 2 weeks after the game is released.
What is that, 12 bucks off a $60
game? I mean, yeah, it's awesome.
48
it's
bucks?
Yeah. Awesome.
I didn't realize it was even after launch. That's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I already buy all my games through Amazon because you can just get it on day one. It's like easy. It's like on the release day, the game's just here.
Yeah.
Every five games, you get a free game.
Yeah. But you were talking about it. You believe GameStop is on the decline. And like when I see stuff like this, like, yeah, it's really hard to compete with.
I mean, numbers-wise, it is on the decline. Like they've had to sort of pivot into instead of traditional games.
Well, they bought ThinkGeek. Right? Isn't that right?
Or they either bought or partnered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're totally going to double down on figuring out how to sell stuff online and compete with Amazon, but also become more of like a used, like they're bringing back retro games like NES and SNES and Genesis games into the stores and become more of like that, like kind of, I don't know, like
collectors.
I don't want to say pawn shop because that has a connotation to it, but that collectors be so a
scene filled with old wedding rings and guns with the numbers filed off.
But that's how that company, like, that's a space where Amazon can't or it doesn't have any interest in like competing or even like eBay. It's kind of hard to know what you're getting. Like, if you are a serious collector of video games, like, you kind of want to see it in person before you pull the trigger on
and
it.
I think one of the things that's also helping them is sort of the boom in Toys to Life from Amiibo to Lego Dimensions. Mm-hmm. To Skylanders, and like, you can get those off Amazon totally, but you can't just download those on like straight to your console or anything. Yeah. And they have huge.
You can 3D print them.
I would download a car if I could.
Would you?
Yeah.
Would you steal a car? You wouldn't steal a car.
Before we move on, real quick on this also is that I think if they were really smart, they would double down on an idea that a lot of smaller kind of mom and pop game stores throughout like the Midwest and the center of the country more have picked up on, which is to make your store kind of like a not just a place where you buy games, but a gaming center where you go to play games and you hold events and tournaments and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like think about a lot of card shops and comic shops that a lot of the most successful ones hold game nights. You know, will run Warhammer campaigns or D&D campaigns or Magic tournaments. Like do a draft or something. And I feel like some of the coolest mom and pop places that I saw when I drove across country when I first came out here, all the best, most successful places were actively encouraging the community, like the fighting game community, or like just different gaming communities to come in and use their space as a play space, as a tournament space, and as a place to like sit down as a kind of like almost an internet cafe and sit down and play games around and with other people. And I think if GameSpot was wanted to be smart about it, that would be an area to going back to my idea where it started, which was hey, build your store as a community. I feel like that's another thing that they should do because that's something else you can't, like Amazon can't create that. Mm-hmm. Either,
so. They could also just give up.
There's that option.
Is that an option for all of us? For being real?
The only job I ever got fired from was a mom and pop game store in high school.
What'd you do?
There's no
crazy. Pop didn't like the way you were looking at mom.
there's no dramatic story there. I was working three jobs at the time and I couldn't close because I had to go bartend. So let me go.
I like that Justin was bartending when he was 18 years old.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like bartending or barback?
And one time,
don't tell us where.
And one time, it was legal. It's state by state.
Oh, it was legal?
Yeah.
Okay.
One time someone tried to ride a horse into the bar.
That's true. Someone tried to ride it. I bartended at a country line dancing, dancing ballroom, like a bar, like a line dancing place. And a drunk cowboy tried to ride his horse into the bar. That's a true story.
What
year?
Oh, I was also a time traveler. Oh, the reason I got fired from GameStop was because I got stuck in 1886. Like, I couldn't find a way to get.
They found out I was from the future, and they thought I was a witch. So they fired me.
People still have horses, Marty.
All right, this is.
I'm the weirdo in this one. I'm the weirdo, guys.
This is Maxim Galarno from the Great White North.
What's it? Is that Canada?
This makes me really uncomfortable.
I think maybe. See, he says English is not his first language, so I'm guessing like Norway, Scandinavia, one of the Scandinavian places. He says, "I listen/watch your show for the last 2 years. It's the first time that I have such a burning question that I need to write it to you. I seek your wisdom and knowledge, so please do not do a Luke Skywalker and just stare at me."
Fucking spoilers, man!
What are you talking about?
that's not A. Luke Skywalker staring at you is not a spoiler for anything until you say spoilers.
Right, that's true.
If we would have rode right through it, it would have been fine.
Oof, it's true.
Do you have a B?
Nope, just A.
Just A.
B. I think your horse story was real weird. I don't think I'm alone.
Maxim continues, after the phenomenal fall in the last year altogether, we gamers had, I played a lot of wonderful games. Witcher 3, Batman, Rocket League, Metal Gear Solid 5, Fallout 4, etc. I was able to finish most of them.
Etc. was really good.
Damn you, Metal Gear Solid 5's Chapter 2. But now is the season that is a little more quiet in big release.
Sort of.
There is a lot of good or average games I missed last year, and most of them are on sale now. Nice. My question is, yes, there is one. When is it too late to get into a new game, more particularly in a multiplayer-centric game?
Ooh.
For
okay,
instance,
that's different. Yeah.
Is it too late to try Evolve, or Destiny, Taken King, even Rainbow Six Siege? My fear is there is not enough players still playing those games, or worse, the remaining players are too hardcore. I'll be killed many times, and I'll hate my experience. What do you think?
That's a pretty good question.
Yeah, it's a very good question, and this is something I think about a lot in terms of MMOs. Like, sometimes I've thought about, like, hey, that MMO looked cool, I never got around to it, I want to try it out, but then I'm like, no, everything's been figured out, it's all math now, there's one optimal build, and I'm going to be experimenting to figure things out for fun, and everyone's just going to be, like, not inviting me to their group because I don't have what's right.
I will say, I want to get back to the original question, but in response to that, I actually like MMOs when I can come into them late and the whole herd has moved on, because then there's not, like, if I used to play WoW a lot, and, like, the day an expansion came out was just a sprint to, like, this dude respawns and then everyone's trying to kill him,
true.
And, like, all the,
that's
like,
true.
It's just crowded, like, it's like going to a crowded mall before Christmas, whereas once everybody's moved on, like, I mostly play MMOs single player anyway, and then it's like, just luxurious, I can go at my own pace and read the quest text.
That's a good
point. I mean, that probably doesn't bother me. But in terms of online games, I mean, it's on a case by case basis. Destiny is still active.
Oh, yeah.
Heck.
You're totally fine with Destiny.
I would not get Evolve, probably.
Yeah, so the thing with Evolve is that, I mean, they're still releasing content for new content for Evolve. So they're still supporting the game. And, like, sure, the player base isn't as big as it was when the game first launched. The difficult thing is, for sure, jumping in as a new player right now, especially if you want to play on the hunter side of things, is really, really tough. Because we're at that stage, I feel like, in the game of Evolve, where if you're playing online as a hunter, you've probably hunted whatever monster you're up against. You've probably hunted that monster a lot. You've worked with other teams a lot. You know exactly what those other characters in your team are supposed to be doing and what you can expect from them, and you know what you need to do. As a new player jumping in, and you've got three other people on your team who are just going to be, I mean, they're not going to be nasty, but they're just going to be like, brah, why don't you know what to do yet?
Yeah, so you're totally right. There's three things here. There's the player base, and there's actually resources. If you just Google, like, you know, Steam players or whatever, you can find places that track how many people are playing a game. Like, is there 3,000 people playing Evolve a day, 30,000, 300,000? Like, you can see that resource. So if you're playing on PC, at least, that's one thing that you can sort of solve with some resources. Is the competitive, you know, game going to be way too, you're just going to get smoked? I had that experience with Call of Duty. Black Ops 3 was new, but it's the same Call of Duty. And I haven't played Call of Duty seriously since 5 years, probably whenever Black Ops 2 came out. And I just couldn't, like, I haven't played since I was pick 10, so I didn't know what was going on with that.
Right.
I didn't know, like, it wasn't fun. Like, I went, like, you know, 2-20, and I'm not a terrible shooter player, but just that was just the playing field that I'm not used to. And it just wasn't, I played 4 or 5 matches, got completely smoked, and I'm like, I don't think I can play this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it's this thing that people just, that's the only thing they play, and that's who I matched up against, and it just wasn't fun. Then there's the cooperative side of it, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
You run into that with something like a MOBA, like, you rely so much on your teammates that if one guy's like, this is my first game ever, what are the buttons? You're just going to be, like, booted. Like, that no one wants to spend an hour getting drugged down by a teammate that, like, can't pull their weight.
Right. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, that said, like, I think Evolve is a fantastic game. I reviewed that last year, and I think it's excellent. I think it's worth people's time. It's worth people's money. The DLC is kind of absurdly expensive, but even if you just get into the core game, it's a lot of fun and it's worth climbing the mountain for, in my opinion. But I always feel like if you just want to jump in and have a good time right away, I don't feel like jumping into an intense multiplayer game like that late in its life is going to be the right thing for you, because you're probably going to spend a lot of time losing and for a while until you get good. And for some people, that's part of the fun. Like, I enjoy the climb of that mountain. I enjoy getting in and getting my face kind of, like, torn up until I start to learn and improve incrementally, and then it feels good when I start winning and doing better. But for some people, they want to jump in and they want their skills from one game to transfer right over. And when a game has been out and developed for, and it's developed, the meta has developed for a while, I think it's tough, and you're just going to be frustrated.
I will say, if Maxim's looking for a specific suggestion, Destiny is probably one of gaming's biggest turnaround stories ever.
Destiny. Or I was also going to say, as far as multiplayer games go, probably Star Wars Battlefront is very easy to just jump into.
Battlefront's very casual, both from a design mechanical standpoint, and I suspect its player base. I actually don't know if this is true. I'd love to find some way to like find this out. But I tear shit up in Battlefront. Like, I'm really good at it, and I don't think it is that I'm really good at it. I think it's just there's way more people in those matches. They're like, yeah, I like Star Wars. I'll buy this game compared to like Call of Duty, where it's like people buying it because it's Call of Duty and they love it and they know it. Mm-hmm. And like. Yeah. I suspect that Battlefront is a little bit more casual audience, which lets me succeed.
They have a great television commercial campaign that just shows people like jumping into X-Wings, and they're like, oh, that looks like a lot of fun.
And I think people play that game a lot more casually. Yeah. But Destiny is an example. Like, I've never been more disappointed in a game in year one and more enamored with a game in year two. Like, the Taken King is so good.
It's great. Yeah, Destiny's one of the rare games where it's almost better if you jumped in a year late.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Yeah.
And they give you tools to catch up. You don't need to worry about, you know, grinding up your level or anything like that. So I really, really think Taken King is really excellent.
Yeah. In terms of single player games, I don't think it's literally ever too late to jump into something.
No. Right.
A cool campaign. Cool campaign's a cool campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely games
like Miyamoto quote.
Yeah. A cool campaign is a cool campaign, but a cool campaign is a cool campaign. I don't know Japanese. I think I might have messed that one up.
Our next email comes from Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style.
He says, it looks like VR is going to drum up a lot of interest in 2016. Mm-hmm. What are some older games you would like to see reimagined for a VR experience?
Metroid Prime.
So, yeah.
Oh, the most overrated Nintendo game of all time.
Get out.
But I can't. We still have show. Finnegan will yell at me if I leave. Finnegan will be disappointed.
Pong.
Older Pong. I mean, I could see ping pong working in.
No, you want to know what? You know what I would love to see? Not even joking. Is Myst. I would love to see a VR.
This would be cool.
A fully 3D realized. Version of that.
People, some people in the office are playing The Witness. I hope that's okay to say. I said it. I'll bleep it out if I have to. But I want a game like that is very Myst-ish and it's recent, and I wonder if it could be fitted into VR.
Yeah, I mean, Portal 2.
I played a Portal VR demo on Vive, and it was like a thing made just for it. It was sort of an experience thing, but it was awesome.
People will figure out eventually long-term first-person shooters in VR. I mean, eValkyrie, like, there's already some games kind of doing it, but in the meantime, while we're really sort of figuring out what works and doesn't work, stuff that doesn't really require that twitch, you know, you have to make a decision or do something right this second. Yeah. Like, where you can just kind of look around and ponder the environment, like a Portal Myst style game would be really great.
And also, like, even for shooters, though, like, it's a matter of them. So the way you think of VR is, I think in the ideal sense, is not that it replaces the right analog stick, but that it's like there's moving with the left, there's
you can do something new with
shooting,
the right analog stick.
Right, exactly. There's shooting with, but I would say that maybe there's aiming with the right, and then it's the VR is just looking, and that can work if you design it the right way.
See,
like
that's,
someone
that's so important. You just touched on something that I don't think people that if you haven't played VR, I don't think people understand. Is VR lets you divorce aiming from looking.
Right, yeah.
Which you've never been able
huge.
To. Like, normally
it's
you look to the right,
thing.
So you aim to the right, and now you can be looking over here and shooting over there. And, like, that opens up a whole new design space that I don't think a lot of people really appreciate or
they
understand.
Don't. Until you get it in your hands, you don't, like.
Like, the big thing is, like, eValkyrie is the one where, like, you can look up around behind you to, like, see what's going on over there, and then that doesn't change what you're firing at or anything
like
that.
I was playing a Drive Club demo at PSX. I was playing a Drive Club demo, and I'm not the hugest fan of Drive Club's, like, racing mechanics, but what I thought was amazing is I never liked to race in racing games. I never play from the cockpit, even though it's immersive and it looks cool, it cuts off so much of my situational awareness. Yeah. But when I was playing it in VR, I stayed in the cockpit mode because if I wasn't sure how, I'm like, how sharp is this turn? I don't want to look at my mini map. I want a sense of it. So I'm making a sharp, like, you know, almost hairpin right turn. Right. And I'm turning the wheel and I'm looking into the turn the whole time. And I'm like, yeah, I got a little more to go, a little more to go, a little more to go. Okay, I'm there. And that's like, you can't do that without VR. But not to get sidetracked, my original point was that I've played kind of like a version of Half-Life 2 that was kind of
Kluge VR.
Yeah, exactly. And I did that on Oculus. And you could tell the game wasn't originally designed that way. But I feel like even based on that, what the main thing there is like rendering more of an arm and a hand so that if I'm looking this way while I'm shooting that way, the arm and stuff, that all looks right. But other than that, it was totally, totally functional. It didn't disrupt my ability to play a first-person shooter in that sense at all. And that just Half-Life 2 happens to have this amazing world that's really great to experience in that way. Mm. So it can totally be figured out.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mention Metroid Prime, because Nintendo's been very quiet on VR.
I feel like
they haven't really addressed it at all.
Yeah, completely absentee.
But I wonder about something like Mario 64.
Yeah.
Like a 3D platformer,
so
like that.
I think everyone always immediately goes to first-person games, and I think third-person
games. Because we know that there are 3D platformers coming.
Yeah, Lucky's Tale is launching. It's comes bundled with Oculus, which is
a 3D
platformer.
A 3D Mario platformer. I mean, I
think I could absolutely see playing through Mario 64 or Sunshine or even Galaxy in that, where your head is sort of the camera.
Yeah.
Your vision is the camera, and one of the coolest things about VR to me is being able to sort of like. When I was playing the Vive, the world sort of becomes a diorama, and like there was one where I'm standing up and looking down at something, and it's like you have a God's eye view of it. But if you like get down on the floor, like you're right down there with it. And so I'm thinking of stuff like SimCity, to where like you build a city, you're viewing it from a tactical, you know, strategic simulation from up top, and then you sort of just like lay down on your carpet and you're like in the city, and you're like looking at stuff and looking at what's happening to people. And
sure.
I think it's really cool. And I played Rez on PSVR, and that worked perfectly. Like, Rez, I want to see stuff like weird stuff. Like, I want to see like what a Parappa the Rapper game looks like in VR, or like Katamari Damacy.
So something occurred to me today that I hadn't thought of before. Card games like Hearthstone or Magic the Gathering in VR.
Yeah.
I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think it'd be amazing.
So in Hearthstone, maybe you're sitting at the table in the tavern.
Yeah.
There's all these like Warcraft characters around you, like
you
cheering.
You almost hear you hear like the din of the bar around you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or Magic the Gathering, like you're like lands and your cards are representative of things. But what if instead of like playing cards, you're like actually like the more like for the land cards you have, you're like the trees are being increased around you, and like you're actually seeing like the creatures that you're summoning up in front of you.
Like a version of like Star Wars chess on steroids.
Yeah, where stuff's actually in it. You're not watching it from up here. You're inside.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
You can see your opponent across the field. Oh my God, that sounds
so good. I think first person things are the tip of the iceberg for VR.
I do think there's the most upside there. Like Super Mario 64 in VR would be really cool, but I don't think it's that different than just being super close to your television, except, you know, the motion tracking. That's why I think first person, like the racing, like I feel like it changes the way a racing game is experienced in a way that I don't think it does for third person stuff, but I still think that I think you're right about SimCity and card games and a lot of that other stuff. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of upside in a lot of different genres for sure.
Yeah. We did it.
Yeah.
Tetris.
So I was thinking
Tetris.
Blocks are just coming.
So no, I played it.
What? VR Tetris?
Super Hypercube?
Super Hypercube. I didn't get a chance to write the piece I wanted to write about it after PSX because other things kind of took me away from it. But I could not, they had to pry me away from Polytron's. So Polytron's new VR game, Super Hypercube, they had to pull me away from it. And so what it is, I want to tell you about this real quick. So think about the 30 seconds of fun that is, it's like 2 seconds of fun is Tetris, right? Where you get a new block, and then you figure out where that block goes and you drop it. That's the 2 seconds of fun of Tetris. And you get this good feeling of, I put the right thing in the right place.
Yeah.
Awesome, I feel good. So they take that, and basically you've got the cube is in front of you, and it starts as just a square, and there's a wall that you're coming up towards that has a gap in it that is a certain shape. And you have to rotate this polygonal shape to fit that profile to make it through. So it starts, you're just putting a square through a square, nice and easy. But then every time you go through through a peg, something gets added on to that. So now it becomes a tetrad, or it becomes all these other elaborate shapes. You have to find the way to rotate it. The trick about it from the VR perspective is that the thing eventually becomes big enough that you can't see the wall and the hole that's in it. So you end up looking around the shape, or having to rotate the shape so you can see it.
And it's almost like those Japanese game shows where like you have to like conform your body because that wall is moving towards you.
Yeah, I mean, I just like the idea that starts as something that you could do in non-VR. Like you could rotate a shape you know, but you need that VR element to eventually look around the thing that's obscuring your view and get your body involved in a way that feels natural and not tacked on. And
they just, they nail the feel of it. Every time you drop one of those blocks through perfectly, it just gives you this very tactile feel. And they even, another nice little touch is they go so far as to render render the controller, the PS4 controller, in a weird like Tron-like wireframe in the the game, and the PS camera tracks the light bar for it, so you see like a kind of a techno light wave version of your controller in the. In the game space, as you're manipulating it, so it's pretty neat.
VR is going to be so cool.
It is going to be really cool. I'm excited.
It is definitely exciting. All right, it's time to play Video Game 20 Questions.
Oh boy, here we go.
Oh yeah, everyone knows how this works. You guys have 20 yes or no questions to guess this week's mystery game. And as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we have some sub-pack prize packs that we're giving away to. People who write in and suggest games for 20 questions and get selected. And we demoed the subpack a couple weeks ago on GameScoop. It's a backpack that's originally made for music production use that allows you to field bass frequencies in the music that you're working on. But then they're also like trying to branch out into video games, and so you could wear it while you're playing a game to feel explosions, feel gunshots, that sort of thing.
That's exactly what I want to feel when I play games.
Yeah. So we have a sub-pack, prize pack, Fallout 4 prize pack to give away to our winner this week. And the prize pack includes the Fallout 4 Vault-Tec sub-pack seat-back system, a Fallout 4 Pip-Boy edition, Pip-Boy bobblehead, Vault-Tec headphones, Vault-Tec mouse, Fallout 4 messenger bag, Fallout 4 mouse pad, and Vault-Tec hoodie. And this is all going to Todd Chillman.
Oh, nice. Congrats, Todd.
What a great name. His last name is Chillman.
Yeah.
Oh. He's one chill dude.
He has anxiety problems.
anyway... You may now begin trying to guess the game that Todd Chillman...
I think it's Legends of the Mystical Ninja.
...suggested.
Nailed it, first try.
That'd be amazing.
Did it come out after January 1st, 2000?
No.
It came out before.
Oh, is it going that way? Are we going...
Oh, no, I just did touches on.
Okay, cool. So it was a no. Okay, did it come out before January 1st, 1985?
No.
Whoa.
Okay. So.
Wow.
Jeez.
I thought you were gonna say 90.
I thought you were gonna say 92.
Wow. So we're in between 95 and 2000.
85. You said 85, right?
He said 95.
No, he said 85.
No, he said 85.
85.
Yes.
Yes. That's why I was surprised.
Oh, did it come out before or after? I'm sorry. I screwed. I did the same thing last time where I misunderstood.
It came out between 85 and 2000. That's what we have after two questions.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
A mere 15 years.
Is this game primarily associated with multiple gaming platforms?
No.
Is this game primarily associated with Nintendo?
Yes.
Crushed it, guys.
Nice.
Legends of
Woo! Let's all just go home. The rest will take care of itself.
So it can be NES, Super NES, N64, or Game Boys. F.
Yeah, ask about a handheld or console.
No, don't ask about it. It's not a handheld. No one's doing a handheld.
I love this
the
question.
Metroid 2. Return of Samus.
The question I always go, I don't know why I have a thing for this question, but does this game happen on a single screen?
As opposed to scrolling?
Yes.
The answer to your question is no.
Okay.
Okay. It's 85 and, okay, is this a NES game?
Yes.
Okay.
Big. It's big. So let's start narrowing down.
Is this game part of a series?
Good question.
Ooh,
yes.
But
although, I mean, yes. The answer is yes.
Star Tropics. Okay. There's two of them.
Well, that's part of a series. No, it's not going to be Star Tropics. It's going to be something weird. Like, maybe the first one is here, and then the... Oh, it's a Boyne's Blob.
Excitebike.
Oh, yeah. You really think... You feel that strongly about that?
No.
Excitebike. We haven't asked... We haven't asked if it's made by Nintendo.
Yeah, I think that's a... So...
Probably is, but
yeah. Okay, so was this game made by Nintendo?
No.
Okay. Oh snap!
Okay, so we eliminated a lot there.
Crunch.
Not part of a series, but kind of some weirdness.
No, it is part of a series.
Oh, it is part of a series,
but in a weird way.
In a weird way.
Much like the hit game A Boy and His Blob, which has another game that came out.
Is this? So, are they still making games?
Yeah, that's what
I mean. The most recent one came out in the last generation. Okay. So. I don't know if another one will be made.
Strider?
But
that wasn't an NES game. Wasn't that a Sega game?
That was an NES game as well.
Oh,
NES game.
But what else was there? Like Bionic Commando?
Well, that's a really good one.
Right.
Is this a Capcom game?
No. That's 10.
So we're at 10. Bionic. Okay. Is this a Konami game?
No.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's what I thought for sure it was going to be Capcom or Konami.
Yeah.
Does the company still exist?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Is the company still around?
I have to look that up.
Ooh, so okay. it's not one of the fancies. It's not a Square game. Nope. It's not a.
Yeah, it could have been Final
Fantasy.
It's
not one of those classic Ubisoft NES games.
What was Ubisoft doing back then?
Oh, weird French stuff, probably.
Weird French
kissing,
stuff.
Sister kissers.
They're actually
weird sister kissers.
Fun fact: they started as a bakery. They just made breads.
Yeah.
Until like Coleco stands for Connecticut Leather Company.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Should we find out more about the protagonist? Maybe.
No.
No.
I mean, I don't know. We can still do whatever you want for your question.
He's doing a cool thumb up. He's like the Terminator who passed away into the Moltons.
Hold on, he's still waiting.
Theater of the Mind.
So the developer and publisher are different companies.
Okay.
I think the developer is not, but the publisher is probably still business.
Okay.
So there you go. No one yet.
Yeah, you just asked a question. No, I asked a question. It's your turn. Never mind.
Do you play as a...
You gave me the worst look.
Do you play as a human?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you a boy?
Are you a sister kisser?
Are you a French sister kisser?
A scrolling NES game where you play as a human, not made by Nintendo.
Monster Boy.
Sort of a series.
It is a series.
Boy plays a human.
The original one is the well-known game, though.
Oh, that's a lot of information.
Yeah, that was a big hint.
Damon's a benevolent god.
Do,
I'm still trying to think.
Does the main character shoot?
Yes.
Pew, 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 pew.
I'm at a complete loss.
It's not Contra, it's not.
No, well, not knowing it's not Capcom and Konami or Nintendo, but was an NES exclusive, I'm like, yeah, we need to narrow down genre. Your character does shoot, and it's scrolling, so that implies that it's some kind of, are you on foot?
Sometimes.
Oh. Okay. So now.
Blaster Master.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Blaster Master.
So it could be Blaster Master. Okay. So it could be Blaster Master. That would be something.
Your boy is Blob. He shoots jelly beans.
It could be.
Was there a Blaster Master last gen? There must have been.
Right? Yes, there was. There was a remake.
I remember, and it looked ugly.
There was a remake of Blaster Master.
Right, I'm just gonna.
A couple of gens ago.
Well, we only have 5 questions left. So I don't want to get cutesy with it.
It could also be. What is it? Maybe I'm remembering the name wrong. Last Guardian.
Yes, that's definitely not right.
It's definitely not the Last Guardian.
No, or is it Lost Guardian?
I don't think it's the NES. If someone wrote down the Lost Guardian, they could go F
it's themselves. It's the NES shmup where you can transform from a fighter jet to a robot that walks on.
But none of these people are men.
He said sometimes you're on foot.
Is that Xevious?
No. So Xevious has.
Just a ship.
Yeah, Xevious is just a ship.
Are you a master of blasting things in this game?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad you all know Blaster Master. I was worried that maybe Vince would be the only one that would know that game.
I like Blaster Master.
Blaster Master 2 was on Game Boy.
Yes.
And then for WiiWare, they made a new Blaster Master game.
Wow.
Oh, for WiiWare.
Yes.
Who's the company?
Sunsoft is the producer.
Yeah.
The publisher.
Yeah, sure.
The developer, some Japanese developer like that I'm not familiar with.
We did
wow.
it.
Blaster Master.
Wow. I love Blaster Master.
Super hard game. Yeah. No like save mode. You had to beat the whole
game.
Played it with a turbo NES controller.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's
good. Yeah, no, terrific
I like
game.
The game mechanic of leveling up your weapon, but then losing it as you take damage.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also just the idea that, like, when you look back and think about how they had to design levels so that you would have these two entities that one of them can work independently of the other. Like, you can get out as a person and then have, so there's side-scrolling areas that have to be designed only
for the vehicle.
For the vehicle, and then other ones that are supposed to be designed for you to traverse on foot. Yeah. And then there's these separate dungeon areas that are only on foot that are top down, kind of.
Master's dope.
Yeah, it's such really a cool. dope design.
Like, and actually, the one for WiiWare was actually cool.
Oh, we'll check it out. Yeah. I hope it comes somewhere that's not WiiWare.
Yeah. Before we go this week, we have a long weekend. What are we going to be playing over the weekend?
I hope to be playing Oxenfree. And
comes on Friday.
That's out on Friday.
Yep. What's the pony game on Steam? Is that what it's called?
Steam Pony.
Pony Trail, Pony Rider.
Crap. I'll look it up. You guys give your answer.
Pony Adventure?
Everyone should play Oxenfree over the weekend.
Yeah. That comes to what on Friday?
Friday to Xbox One and PC.
It's a short 5 hour.
Weird for it to come out on a Friday.
Yeah, super weird for it to come out on a Friday. It's really great adventure game. Amazing story. It's like Freaks and Geeks meets Lost meets Poltergeist.
X-Files.
Really good. It's got a little bit of X-Files in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have a couple
review
games.
You've already played that, so what are you going to play this weekend?
We have a couple review games, stuff that I've talked about probably on this show 1,000 times that I'm going to play.
Pony Island
is the name of the game. Yep. First person, cool things that are coming out in the next month.
I'm going to be playing a mix of Nuclear Throne, since that's my crackdown. I can't quit it.
So I like Nuclear Throne a lot. Is it only on Steam?
Do you know what you just said, by the way?
That's my crack now, I said.
Oh, I thought you said my crackdown.
I was like...
No, like, that's like, my crack now.
Yeah. Is it only on Steam?
Oh no! You get that's on Vita and PS4.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I played on Steam yesterday, and I was like, "This is awesome! I would really prefer to use a controller."
No, I crack out on that on my Vita on the train every day.
He said crack out.
Yeah.
I thought he said he crack out. Do you still have your 360? Polish city.
Yeah.
If you still have your 360, I play most Steam games by plugging my Xbox 360 into my computer.
On your Mac.
Oh, well, see, that's a little dicier. Some games, yes, but yeah, that's true.
You can plug an Xbox One controller. I played through Oxenfree on my MacBook Air using an Xbox One controller. Okay. Oh. You just download like a little workaround.
Yeah, but that's...
Well, I'll just play it on my PS4.
So
I think Nuclear Throne's awesome.
Yeah, Nuclear Throne's incredible, so I'll be playing more of that as usual. I'll be making more of my way through Undertale. I've already played several hours of Undertale, but I'm dying to play more. Mm-hmm. And the one I'm going to be probably playing the most that I can't stop playing, it's like my nightly ritual now, is Darkest Dungeon, leading up to its release next week.
Yeah, full release.
Have to give a special shout out to Final Fantasy Record Keeper, which I'm still going strong on. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you showed me that game. Looked surprisingly cool.
Yep, it's gotten really cool over the last year.
What are you playing?
I've like to announce, I've decided to stop playing Fallout 4.
Nobody finishes Fallout 4. Everyone just eventually makes the decision to stop. Yeah.
But I've been playing this new game, Tharsis.
Oh yeah,
that came out this week.
I've been thinking about picking that up. I was looking at it last night.
It's very cool. It's available on PS4 and PC, mm-hmm. and it's a turn-based strategy. Dice rolling game where you try to get a crew to Mars.
Yep.
So it's a little like FTL. But
dice based.
Yeah, and on every turn something goes wrong in your ship. It'll cause damage to your ship if you don't fix it, and you have to roll dice to like try and fix the problem.
It's almost like a board game?
Yeah, yes. it is very much
a board game.
Well, it's like a solitaire board game.
It's like, do I heal this person up or fix the hull?
So if your ship takes too much damage or if all your crew dies, you lose. And you have 10 turns to get to Mars.
That sounds awesome.
It's really cool.
It's got cannibalism.
Cannibalism. So it's, I almost don't want to, this is just a really cool feature. It's a dice rolling game. If you choose to eat one of your crew members, your dice become all bloody for the rest of the game.
Oh,
and every
really
time
cool.
you roll, they splatter blood all over the screen. Yeah. It's very cool.
I like that a lot.
So that's Tharsis. That's out right now. And of course, I'll be playing Hearthstone every day.
Oh, yeah,
you're not done with that one yet, are you?
No. I've decided not to stop playing Hearthstone.
I think you have to make an announcement every week. I've decided I'm still going to play Hearthstone.
And even when he decides that he's done with Hearthstone, Hearthstone will not be done with him.
Yeah.
No. Bring it to VR, Blizzard.
You're here first.
All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Vince. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. And we're out.
We did it. Good morning, California. Let's turn the servers on. Let's drive and check the chatter. Let's all just sing along.
so far away. You should have seen it coming. You found out yesterday.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.